Hey, Brendan.
Hello, Alan.
Back again for another Not a Thing podcast. We're reasonably on time this week, so
Tuesday, so we did it. We did well.
Yeah, no complaints. So shut up.
No one was complaining. You preemptively shut people up. That's rude as a host.
Well, I'm just happy to be up and recording again. It's been good. I know we've been good. We've been consistent every week since we've started, and we're now I don't know. I'm still excited by the show every week, so it's fun. I just like recording, man. I love talking to you. It's good. And if you love talking to us too, we again, if there are topics or things you'd like to talk about, we would love to have you on the show. No thing is too insignificant.
Some things are too weird, though. So we'll have to discuss it before we put you on a mic.
Sure. But if you feel passionate about it, we might indulge you for a little bit anyway. So we'll see how it goes. Speaking of things, the first topic on the docket today is the Internet of Things, which is kind of just this random term for the fact that a lot of things are becoming more internet enabled, now phones essentially are all on the internet for the most part, and then there's all sorts of things that can be made internet enabled with kind of very very little kind of circuitry and hardware. So anything that you can stick an Arduino chip onto, which is like less than $15 or less than $20 worth of hardware, it can have Wi-Fi and then can be a thing on the internet. There's the Raspberry Pi, which we've talked about, the little computer. It's like $40, and you can internet enable it very quickly. So it's really turning into lots and lots of devices can be internet enabled, but also not just internet enabled, but able to collect data and be internet enabled. And so I don't know how to pronounce her name. Lady Ada.
Yeah, it's a,
from
I'm not going to say it's a weird name, but it's a name I'm not going to try and pronounce.
Yeah. We'll link the name, and then hopefully
yeah, you can read it.
She can come back and tell us how to pronounce it. She runs Adafruit, which is a fun website if you are interested in any kind of Internet of Things stuff. So internet enabling whatever. You can buy Arduinos, Raspberry Pis, all sorts of weird fun stuff.
All the stuff that's causing us to move to IPv6.
Yes.
You've used up all the addresses. Congratulations.
Yes. We want to use as many addresses as there are sands on the face of the earth, isn't that?
Yeah, I'll see your hex in hell.
Yeah. I used to be able to remember IP addresses. Remember those days when you used to be able to kind of just rip them off the top of your head? Not so much. Not so much anymore. Anyway, the deal with all of these devices connecting to the internet and collecting data is that they have the potential to have bad things happen to you because of all that data. We've talked about it on the show plenty of times about how, just harvesting of data is rampant by various groups, including the NSA. Hi, NSA, by the way. If it would be easy for, a commercial entity to do something bad with it, but it's also equally kind of crazy that all of that data is somewhere and collected, by somebody. And so the good folks over at Adafruit, and specifically Lady Ada, said that, there should be a bill of rights for the Internet of Things. And it's a very short kind of article, and it just lists a few points, and it really comes down to the owner of the thing should have the rights over the data that that thing collects. So the ability to anonymize it or delete it or otherwise, or even back it up and look at it is or should be a thing. I mean, that's something that we talked about a while ago. Like say your pedometers, I think we had talked about on the show, and how it can, you can identify someone by the way a pedometer picks up how they walk. But the only data that you get out of the pedometer itself is like the number of steps. And so it would be really interesting, at least to me, I think, and probably to other people too, to see like what is that identifying information? What are the parameters of things that define like who I am by, or can define who I am by that? I just think that kind of stuff's interesting and should be a thing.
It should be a thing. Unfortunately, I think it's less likely to be a Bill of Rights so much as a pipe dream of rights, because that's never going to happen.
Oh, the internet.
Call me a pessimist. But,
yeah, I mean, the real kind of crux of it is just that people making laws often do not understand the ramifications of those laws on actual people. Like, the technology is still very scary to people, and I think it makes more sense to legislate things into or out of existence rather than to figure out like how the technology can actually be leveraged. And that's happening in the UK right now. So a story that I had not been really aware of is the UK government plans on stepping on top of the internet at large and enacting filters that you have to opt into if you want to see certain content, and that content specifically is any kind of adult or content that they would deem harmful to minors. And the intent for this is to guard children against seeing stuff that they shouldn't see, specifically pornography or violence or just, well, actually, it's not that specific, I guess. It's just stuff that they consider objectionable or questionable for children. And so there's...
Well, it's anything that has a age requirement to view.
Yeah. So there's one kind of thing where it's a little like, I don't know how this works, but the because they couldn't legislate the internet to having a real 18 or over kind of check or whatever their kind of rule would be, their thought is that, okay, let's just filter all the internet that that acts that way. And I don't know exactly how they're applying it, but it's most likely kind of blacklists or IP ban lists or something to that effect. And that will probably be effective to some degree. But one of the things that they're specifically stepping on is VPNs, because VPNs, if you're not familiar, let you usually connect to another network and then kind of masquerade as that network. And usually it's used for if you're at home and you want to pretend you're in the work network so you can access work resources or something like that. And one of the ways you can use a VPN is you could pretend you're in another country, which essentially says that I don't have these restrictions or filters. And it's a way to get around those kinds of things. And it seems like they want to ban, the UK wants to ban those things to protect children. And there are all sorts of problems with that, because banning VPNs means that you're potentially banning very legitimate traffic from happening. And the other thing which the article mentions is that if a kid is savvy enough to decide, oh, I should use a VPN in order to get around this problem, they're maybe not the kind of person that would be harmed by quote unquote objectionable content. I think, I don't know. I think VPNs are still slightly sophisticated technology. It's not something that just everyone knows how to use. So it's, it seems more of a grab for, let me be able to, snoop all of the traffic that comes into, the UK than, let's protect the children. It just seems like a way to
think of the children, Alan.
Yeah. Won't anyone think of the children? I mean, it seems very, it's so bad. The only thing I can, compare it to right now is, it seems very Big Brother, which is really kind of a thing in the UK. I mean, the whole, closed circuit TV cameras, and traffic cameras being used for, you know, civilian monitoring for crime, crime
yeah,
stuff.
The CCTV system in England makes the NSA look pretty weak sauce.
Yeah. So,
I mean,
so
it's like, it's one thing to read someone's emails or gather their metadata, but they're literally watching the people.
Right. 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 So, it's kind of, I don't know. I guess it's not unheard of to know that they want to do that for their internet, but it's a little shocking that, it is actually proceeding and at the rate that it is. And it's another, again, one of those cases where I think leveraging the technology rather than banning it might be a better way to kind of work with the system. But, you know, we're just two kids on a podcast, right?
We will not be blocked going into the UK.
Hopefully not.
Assuming we get some listeners in the UK. I don't think we have any right now.
I think we might have one or two in the EU, you know, so.
Well, yeah.
I'd hope so. If they want to get in on the Fantasy Football League next year, they better, right?
Right.
Let's see.
I don't like to make those kind of threats. I'd like to leave that to Alan.
Moving on to another thing with the NSA, our friends at the NSA, someone at the NSA, and I unfortunately didn't write down his name.
Keith Alexander
has a demo command center room for kind of overlooking national emergencies or otherwise. You know, acting as a situation room for things. And, you know, I guess it's not, I don't know if it's common to kind of build these, but I guess they wanted to have a few command centers in different places. And this one in particular, he dressed up to look like the bridge of the Next Generation Enterprise. The, I assume it's the D Enterprise. I guess it could be the E, but no one likes that one.
I would expect so.
Yeah.
It could be. No, from the picture, it looks more like a D.
Yeah. So it has the chairs that the leather chairs and the kind of, I assume, the arched, like, tactical console and everything. But the thing that I thought was hilarious was there were doors and panels that make a whooshing noise when opened. So that, I mean, things don't make noise when you open them, generally. You have to build that kind of noise in, so I don't know if there are little, like, sound generators that do that or what, but that's rad.
They spared no expense.
Yeah. Your tax dollars at work. Well, I don't know. It actually sounded like he might have paid for some of it himself, but since he's paid by the government, it is your tax dollars at work.
Well, so. The thing that killed me about that was that he used this to convince members of Congress to kind of go along with what they were planning at the NSA.
Yeah.
And everyone wanted, they say, that someone was quoted as saying that everyone wanted to take their turn as Jean-Luc Picard in the chair. And what the NSA is doing is so not Picard.
No.
That is not the Star Trek philosophy.
No, not at all, in fact. I mean, I guess if you saw Into Darkness, it might be considered the Star Trek philosophy. If you
they're like Section 31.
The bad Star Trek. Or the maybe everyone at the NSA has those little purple parasitic aliens in them from the end of what season was that? Was that season one? The end of season one? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't know.
The Admiral had that thing, and the only way you could tell was there was that little like horn or claw that was sticking out of the back of the neck.
Oh, and
all the admirals get really like we should kill all these people and blah blah blah. And
the NSA really is like our Section 31. Or maybe since they're not super federation-y, if that's a word, it's not.
Super federation. More
like, I don't know, the Obsidian Order or something like that. Yeah, that's right. I just dropped an Obsidian Order reference. Most people aren't going to understand or appreciate that, but as long as there's at least one person out there who does, I consider that a victory.
We'll see. I'm gonna wait for the comment threads to explode for that one.
You know, no Cardassian secret police fans out there? No? No Cardassian intelligence? No? Come on, guys. How about the Tal Shiar? How about no Tal Shiar? No? Get the Romulans in on this shit. Enjoy it, nerds.
Oh,
that goes
man.
Out to all the Trekkers.
Star Trek should be a thing.
Yes.
It's did you hear kind of unfortunately derailing what we were talking about, but did you hear the garbage about the Into Darkness like special features?
Yes.
So the movie is going to be obviously released in a number of formats like Blu-ray and online and you know iTunes and DVD and not only that, they're selling them from different vendors, you know, Target and Best Buy and whatever. And Paramount is releasing the commentary and certain featurettes and other extras with the movie, as you would expect. But what's crazy is they're releasing them on different formats. So you would essentially, if you wanted all of those features, you would have to buy all of those formats from all of those vendors. It's like you'd have to buy the DVD from Target, the DVD from Best Buy, the download from iTunes, the Blu-ray from Amazon. Oh, that's just phenomenal. And for a movie that, unfortunately, I'm not sure I'm going to buy. I mean, we talked about Into Darkness on the show before, and I'm...
Multiple times.
I'm not sure that this is the right strategy to get my money, Paramount. But I do have hope that there will be better Star Trek in the future. That should be a thing.
Yes.
So I guess how do I come back to? I don't. Right. I just don't. Anyway, we'll just call this a transition right here, and we're transitioning over.
No,
to...
no, I can do this. I can do this.
Oh, okay. All right.
So Star Trek
yeah.
is different than Star Wars.
Uh-huh.
And in Star Wars, they had the Star Destroyers that had the little shield balls up
yes.
on the top of the bridge.
Yes, the shield generators.
And there's these new houses you can make. Yes. There's these new houses that look strikingly like those shield things.
Okay, I'll go with that. So the deal
yeah, okay,
is...
Yeah, as a stretch.
Yeah, so... an architect and kind of person who's into a movement for tiny houses built a little geodesic dome that he's lived in for I think 3 years, and the geodesic dome just means it's a dome, you know, it's a curved kind of surface, but instead of having actual curves in it, it's made up of things that normally would have straight lines. So in this case, it's triangles that are arranged into pentagons and hexagons. So they look, and it fits together like actually a soccer ball, and that's the way that they he shows how to build it. It's you know, it's an interesting kind of article, and it goes through a lot, but really the bit that, well, there are two bits that are pretty interesting about it. The first one is that it's frameless. So if you build if you've seen domes that are like this, usually the joins between the shapes, there is a frame that all of those shapes are kind of put into. In this case, it's just the shapes themselves are holding it up. So it's a lighter structure, so it can be more easily built, and it also means it can be more easily taken down and moved, and so
unbuilt.
Yeah, yeah, you don't have to bulldoze it, you know, and or anything, I guess. But the really interesting thing is the whole tiny house movement kind of bit. There is a link further in the article talking about the relationship between the square footage that a person occupies and the amount it costs to kind of work with that square footage, or work with and own and maintain and stuff like that. And it's really kind of surprising how quickly that ramps up. Like it seems like, you know, people can generally be happy with a lot less space than is necessarily built into places. I know that my wife and I, our house is not, I mean, it's not tiny by any means, but it's smaller, I think, than a lot of the houses in kind of San Jose proper. I mean, it is a house, so it's big, but it's certainly you know, cozy, and I think I like that amount of coziness. I mean, I know when we visited to Colorado, it was kind of ridiculous the amount of money that would be used to buy a house like easily twice the size of ours, if not more. And it would still be less than I pay to live, you know, here in California. But it's the kind of thing like, we're two people. I don't know if a house that big is even full with like eight people. So, I don't know. I found it also really interesting. It reminded me of there was a guy at Maker Faire a few years ago who would build you know, houses that were on the small side, but they were built to fit so you could put them on a standard or a more standard kind of, you know, urban lot, and then it was just showing how much more dense you could put people, but still have it be very functional and livable. And it seems like that's a better way to do it, to get a freestanding structure than an apartment kind of structure. I mean, it just seems more kind of humane to give people kind of first floor and land rather than, you know, like multi-story SimCity arcology kind of buildings. I don't know. Not that those aren't cool, especially if you can upgrade them enough that they can take off into space. I don't know. Did you play SimCity a lot?
Not really.
Or at all? Okay.
I played some. I just like building things and then unleashing a robot that would destroy everything. Yeah.
My favorite was the Godzilla style monster, and I would always try and have him attack near where the airports were, because he would often also swat down a plane, which meant that there were all sorts of multiple disasters going on. But you're right, it is a very kind of fun game to kind of build but then also destroy. this is all pre-Minecraft. See?
Yes.
Are you a Minecraft person?
I played a demo for a little bit. I haven't gotten the game. Yeah, I just got BioShock Infinite.
No. So
that will be consuming my life for the next few weeks, I will expect.
Yeah. It's good. We can talk about it. But I find, I don't know, I guess I can't get into Minecraft. I don't know what the appeal is other than a massive time sink, which it certainly is. It doesn't seem well, it's not necessarily compelling because of a storyline or a character or anything. It's more just, it's really good at wasting all your time.
So it's a video game. Because they all kind of are just a waste of time.
Well, some interesting things that you can do with video game-like technology is what the guys at SpaceX are doing. There was a really neat video that showed some, I guess they're rocket scientists, I guess. They're building the rockets that they'll use in the, you know, in the SpaceX like craft or whatever. And it they use something similar to the leap motion. It might even actually be the leap motion, which lets you control things in 3D space with hand gestures, and you're essentially sticking your hands in front of your computer screen and pushing around the model. And they would use not a computer screen, but maybe a VR headset, so they could actually see it in 3D. And then they would 3D print prototypes of different parts or things, so they could they could pick it up and touch it and whatever. And in running through my head the entire time is all he has to do is stick his hand through the glove, and then you have Tony Stark is Iron Man. You're just done. I mean, we already know Elon Musk is like 80% there. He should just do it, in my opinion. He needs to have that press conference.
He should just change his company name. Just change the company name to Stark Enterprises. No one will sue him, I'm sure.
No. No, they'd probably give him money. Disney doesn't, really sue people. Right? Not really. Sort of.
No, but they're getting sued.
Oh, really?
They're getting sued by Stanley Productions, or Stanley, one of his companies.
Huh.
Because he has none of the rights to any of the Marvel characters, and he wants it back.
Well, doesn't he have some kind of hold over Spider-Man?
No, I think Spider-Man's owned by Sony.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's why that isn't ever included whenever they do any Marvel stuff.
Yeah, it's like Spider-Man's owned by somebody. The entire rest of the Marvel universe is owned by Disney, except for the X-Men or anything. They can't use the word mutant. That's owned, I think, by Fox.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, what a tangled web.
Which is how Fox had the rights to Fantastic Four, which then they gave up because they didn't make any more movies, and now I think those reverted back to Disney.
Okay.
Which is why they're rebooting it.
Wow. Okay.
I think that's right.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I mean, I don't think it's right, but I think yes. The information is correct.
Very important distinction. Very important distinction. Did I go out of order on these?
No, we just went on a tangent.
No, okay, all right. Well, so another tangent, tangential thing that's happening. When The Walking Dead comes back, this is spoilerless right now, but when The Walking Dead comes back, UC Irvine and AMC apparently collaborated to make an online course. Which I guess is described as a massively open online course, and I don't understand what that means. But it's a course that anyone can take, and I guess that's what makes it massively open. And it's online, so I guess yeah, that's how they do it. Anyway, the MOOC, or however you pronounce it, MOOC. It's going to be about The Walking Dead and character studies and I guess theme theme kind of
the things that you talk about of you know, learned things in school.
Yeah,
but except it's about a TV show about zombies,
right? And what was interesting was that it's not showing until, or it's not the first class is not being offered until the show kicks back on again. And so I don't know if they're just using this as an excuse to like draw college kids together so they can talk about the show. But if that's what they're doing, that's actually not a bad idea. Kind of school-sponsored watching parties for The Walking Dead. Yeah, that's a good idea, AMC. Good job. I don't know. Would you take a course about The Walking Dead?
No, college is expensive. I mean, I guess if it's a MOOC, yeah, I'd think about it because I believe those are free.
Yeah.
So maybe, but if it was a normal class, no.
Would you get credits for it?
Oh, I guess it would depend.
I mean, if I got credit for it, maybe, because I could see it being interesting, but maybe not super applicable in my my career at this time.
Right.
Or any time. But I don't know. Depending on what they talk about, I think classes about entertainment and are inevitable as it goes, right? I mean, essentially, literature classes are to some degree that. And if you're going to pick a show to hold up as something you should have classes for, I think The Walking Dead is a good show. There are other shows that might even be better than that. Breaking Bad comes to mind.
Yes.
But yeah, there's all sorts of entertainment that I think is rife for kind of more scholarly analysis and stuff. So yeah, it's a good thing. It should happen. And kind of moving from non-spoiler territory into potentially spoiler territory, we're going to talk about a documentary that you actually recommended to me.
Yes. Vikram Gandhi's Kumare.
Kumare. I think I had heard about it on NPR very briefly. I mean, the short form is Vikram Gandhi is a filmmaker, and he actually, the blurb that they show before the credits kick on is like the perfect trailer for his show. I don't know if he meant it to do that, but probably. So you could just, you know, pick up the first few minutes and then play it as the teaser for the movie itself. But the short form is that he started out wanting to make a film about how religious leaders and gurus are essentially not necessary. The things that make religion kind of bad or otherwise questionable are those people. And religion in and of itself isn't necessarily something that is bad. But people who can twist the message are the things that get in the way, was what it seemed like his initial premise was. And the way that he decides to express this is that he essentially makes himself up to be a guru and teach things to people that he's kind of, you know, teach a kind of philosophy that is, it. I think he was saying that it is rooted in Hinduism specifically, but otherwise teach stuff that he just made up and see how far he could take it. And he takes it pretty far.
Yeah, the people, he gets his own little following down in Arizona, and it they really take to it.
Yeah, I think he ended up getting, I think it was 14 or 15 people to essentially meet with him regularly and kind of go through life. And he shows the kinds of connections that he forms with people. And then he also intercuts that with other religious leaders that he meets that he doesn't ever specifically say that they're quacks or, you know, faking, but they are like the more extreme kinds of versions of these kinds of things. So there was one guy who his title was like acoustic theologian.
Yeah.
So essentially he was saying that you can experience God through sound. And so he was doing all sorts of crazy sound things. He was playing a didgeridoo. He was drumming and like shaking maracas kind of around. And at one point he was using an orbital sander to kind of induce vibration noise and everything. It was you know, really surprising, but you could tell that it was if it wasn't an act, he was really, really trying and really pulling it together. And that was actually something that I was surprised about just with the filmmaker, Vikram Gandhi. I mean, like, he is selling it the whole time. I mean, there were numerous points
not only that, the whole time he's telling everyone that he's a fake.
Yeah.
But everyone thinks it's this Eastern wisdom and that he's speaking in riddles, but the whole time he's just saying he's a fake.
Yeah.
And no one wants to hear what he's saying.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that was really interesting too. Right, exactly, exactly. I mean, it's the Bruce Lee, you know, style without style kind of thing. You know, you're whatever he's saying when he's denying what he is, it only reinforces it because people see so much kind of they make up their own subtext essentially. And that was something that that I found was really common in all of those things. I mean, the thing that was there for religion for him was that there's so much kind of ritual and pomp and circumstance and everything, but the things that appealed to him about religion, at least from his experience with his grandmother, were the sense of calm you could get when you're kind of alone and focused. And it seemed like he was trying to advocate that more than you have to follow a specific thing or a specific way of doing things. And I think that's that is a very kind of noble way to do it in a non specifically theistic kind of way. And that's probably being a little too verbose about it, but it's essentially saying that you don't need, you know, a religious leader specifically to get you to enlightenment. And what I'm reading into that is you don't need even a religion to do that. It's really just if you, I mean, his precepts about, you know, looking for the goodness in yourself, looking for the goodness in other people, the whole blue light thing was really just, you know, the looking for clarity essentially and finding that in other people and kind of thinking of yourself really was a very common theme also. I mean, these are just precepts for living well and not necessarily something that has to be ascribed to, you know, a religion or a spirituality. And so, I mean, I think he could have even gone further in what he was saying, but I think he had to, or by structuring it in the kind of veil of a kind of mystic religion, made it more acceptable.
I found it interesting his whole idea of that there are no gurus, or that no one is better than anyone else. No one knows any more than anybody else. That we are all gurus, mm-hmm. You know, or we all have the ability to become gurus.
Yeah.
which kind of takes down that whole structure.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's the, again, it's that sense that it's not necessarily that you need an external structure to do anything or to be a better person. I mean, all of those things are in people. I mean, maybe
all the tools you need are at your disposal already. You don't need anyone else to tell you necessarily how to reach those points that you try to get to.
Yeah, I don't know if
I'm a very unreligious person, non-religious. I would even say non-spiritual, but I don't know. There was something about the way the movie was presented. Like it was humorous, but it also had a lot of heart to it. That I don't know. It kind of got to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Asking some questions.
Right. I mean, I think the main thing is exactly what you said. It's like you don't need a person to be your religious leader specifically. If what you're trying to get to is, you know, your enlightenment or your growth, and that was actually said by one of the people, and I think it was the lawyer, the death row lawyer. One of the things she said was that, you know, he says that he's not teaching us, but really what he's doing is he's teaching us how to learn, not necessarily teaching us things. And I thought that was really a good point of it, is that the religious leaders for learning how to interpret religion is something that I think he agrees with is potentially harmful or bad, or at least possibly at the worst
disingenuous,
misleading, right? The things that are more directly applicable to how you live your life and how you find kind of goodness and clarity were what he was teaching. And I think that is completely valid as a way to be, you know, a leader, you know, but it doesn't, there's not a good kind of thing for that. I mean, what do you call that? It's not, I mean, it rolls up to like religious leader, but it's really not necessarily a religious leader or anything. It's really more like it's almost like life coach, but life coach doesn't right. have any kind of cachet at all.
Well, and that's another part of the movie is touching on this whole Western embrace of Eastern culture as this, you know, mystical, it's wiser. It's all just marketing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the craze of yoga.
Yeah, I mean the thing that I got from those from the bits about like when they went to other when he went to I forgot the name of the other city he went to in Arizona. It was Tucson, I think. When he kind of taught that class, and then he went to that guy's house just to see how far he could push it, and he made like an altar with a picture of him, a picture of Barack Obama, and a picture of Osama bin Laden, like as equals essentially on this altar, and got him to kind of be okay with that. And it's
who had a doctorate in philosophy.
Right, 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 right. And so, I mean, I think people are predisposed to wanting kind of more or learning more or having some kind of sense of something bigger than themselves. I mean, it's similar to what we were talking about in the movie show, how people are wired to recognize kind of stories where there's a narrative arc and a hero's journey. I think it's very similar. I think there's some kind of drive towards something, and it isn't necessarily religion, but it is very easily expressed through religion. That and it's easy to take comfort in that, and it's easy to kind of pull that together, but I agree that it's easy also for that to be very very twisted or very confused, and you know, as human nature is, people can be kind of bad about that, and it can be very easily twisted in a bad way,
which he proved by drawing dicks on people's faces.
Yes.
Saying it was a symbol of happiness.
Yes. I think it was funny that no one called him on it after he said it. It was
it's a penis.
Yeah, it was very clear when I first saw the picture. I'm like, is he drawing dicks on their heads? Oh my god, that guy is totally doing that. Well, anyway.
So it kind of starts out as a Borat type movie.
Yeah.
But it definitely has more heart.
Oh, absolutely. More,
like, he actually, you know, forms a connection with these people. And that, the final reveal, because the whole time, from the beginning of the movie, he says, you know, I'm going to reveal myself
mm-hmm.
at some point.
Right.
And just watching that was, it was hard to watch.
Yeah.
It just felt so stressful.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, for a documentary to have kind of an arc like that. I mean, it was more, it wasn't specifically, I guess, I don't know. I like it as a documentary because there was there were character arcs. I mean, there was so much growth in his character, in the people that he was kind of working with. And then there were enough kind of snippets of other kinds of things that it was just really well put together and well done. I think his method might have been a little sharp, and it's easy to see, you know, to make the connection with Borat. But it's not like he was specifically misleading people for comedic effect, I think.
No, it was not malicious.
Right.
But although there was, I think, some great humor.
That one yoga teacher may have taken offense to it. But
I think there were a few people who didn't take too kindly to it.
Right.
But watching him with the past life psychic is pretty darn funny.
Yeah.
And even he almost broke character briefly.
Right, right.
You see, he gives great looks to the camera when someone's... He doesn't do the crazy things. He just sits back and lets other people say crazy things.
Yeah, that was the thing that was... I mean, it softens it a lot. I mean, it's definitely that he's just letting the camera run and these people are going on. And that's what's happening. And it's, I never thought that it was necessarily mean to even those people, right? I mean, when he was at the, that commune that was trying to live off the grid, even though they're very kind of off in space about how things are happening and everything, his kind of summation of the place was, yeah, it's just a bunch of environmentalists that want to live away from everybody else, and this is how they do it. And it really doesn't sound kind of harmful. I mean, it might be not for everybody, but I mean, that's why they keep to themselves.
Right.
So.
But no, I give the movie my full recommendation. Anyone, I think, could enjoy it. It's available on Netflix, and it's really not, it's not even an hour and a half.
Yeah, it's 80,
pretty short.
84 minutes.
80-something minutes.
Something like that. Yeah, it's really good. And I think if you watch, like I said, if you watch the opening blurb before the kind of original credit and title come on, and it sounds interesting, you should finish it, because it is much more interesting than that. So yeah. Thing.
Definitely. Kumare and Vikram Gandhi, definitely. Well, I mean, he's a person. Actually, both of them are him, so he is people? No, that's not good English.
No. English and grammar should be a thing, but when describing this movie, they kind of fail.
Yes.
So I think that's it for the week. Let's call this one good. Next week, I'm going to be... recording from a different place. Hopefully not that you'd be able to tell, because
they have the internet in Florida, right?
Right. Our recording studio in Florida will have probably very similar acoustics to our recording studio in San Jose, which is not to be confused with the recording studio that you're at. Where are you this week? Is it the underground bunker? Is it?
Yes. No. This is my underground bunker in Sebastopol. Okay. I mean, in an undisclosed location.
Fair enough. Well, keep undisclosing that location, and we'll talk to you next week, Brandon.
Till next time.